Well, I could not finish a week looking at the problems of mass and scale without turning to a certain Ted Kaczynski, also known as the Unabomber, of course. Now, before I say anything else, it goes without saying, I disavow some of the actions he took during his life, and he spent a long time in jail for it as well. But that does not mean that Kaczynski, you know, was not a great thinker. I mean, after all, we looked at Louis Althusser, who murdered his wife. We looked at Otto Weininger, who committed suicide. So, you know, great thinkers often do silly or evil things. It does not stop us considering, you know, what they had to say. And when it comes to the issue of mass and scale, the industrial society and its future, by Ted Kaczynski, is one of the more penetrating and thought-provoking looks at it. That's what he looked like. Now, before we get going, I'll remind people you can pick up courses at the Academic Agency. Buy it now. Trivium is the bestseller. Foundations of Economics, Foundations of Politics, Foundations of Shakespeare, all fantastic courses. Foundations of Research, if you want to dip your toe in, if you want to get them all together in one amazing package, the Ultra Bundle. Just under a grand it'll cost you, and frankly, I'm giving it away. Basically, you know, a whole degree's worth of stuff there, basically, for less than a grand. Okay, so let us now have a look at Kaczynski. So the industrial technological system is the main thing that Kaczynski is looking at. He says modern industrial society forms a single, tightly integrated system. Its continued functioning demands the constant expansion of technology and organization, operating independently of human needs or wishes. No single actor controls it all. The system sustains itself through its own internal logic. Now, this is something that we saw also in Jacques Ellul. And it's a certain logic that we've seen in the work of James Burnham and in Samuel T. Francis yesterday as well. You know, the kind of addiction to technique, you could say. The system has a need for control. To maintain itself, the industrial system must exercise ever greater control over human behavior, over human nature, and over society overall. As complexity increases, so does the apparatus of the regulation and oversight. And if you can't see how this connects to what I was talking about with Samuel Francis yesterday, you know, you go back and watch it again, because it's many of the same points re-emerging here. We get an expanding bureaucracy that is larger and larger institutions required, denser rule sets in order to function, and we get a shrinking freedom, where individual autonomy is progressively narrowed as the system grows. Kaczynski argues that human beings require a power process, setting meaningful goals, exerting genuine effort, and attaining outcomes through real agency. Industrial society systematically frustrates this. Now, what is he talking about, Kaczynski, here? Let's just try to put this in concrete terms. Imagine you lived in a village of 100 people or 150 people, something like Dunbar's number, okay? In that society, if you were a young man or woman, you could realistically have some hand in the power process. You could, even in feudal society, you might become the shrieve, or you might become the bailiff, or you might be, you know, sit on a jury, or you actually had some legitimate part of the power process. This condition of the power process being frustrated is endemic to modern life. In other words, in the society of mass and scale, unlike in a small village, you basically have almost no chance of being part of the power process. you're kind of, it's too big for any one person to influence. And for most people, it's just outside of the purview of their power. And we'll come back to this idea in a moment because it's important. In lieu of being part of the power process, which people need to feel fulfilled and to feel like they have agency in this world, instead, people turn their attentions to surrogate activities. What is a surrogate activity? It is something that you do in lieu of the power process. When the power process is blocked, people turn to artificial substitutes, activities that simulate fulfillment without addressing any of their deeper needs. What are some surrogate activities? Careerism and status seeking. Consumer acquisition. Competitive hobbies. Political activism as an identity. Now, this last one is pretty important in the current moment because so many people use politics, national politics, whether it's a MAGA hat or a pussy hat or a I'm Labour or I'm Tory or I'm Reform or I'm Restore or I'm whatever, as a stand-in for actually being part of the power process. And if you've read any of my work, Populist Illusion, Applied Elite Theory, you will understand just how little part in that process you play. You are actually a passive subject of power. And if you wish to become active, you will quickly find yourself either on the inside of a jail cell, as Ted Kaczynski found himself, or very quickly locked out of polite society. The power game, one, happens on a scale that you can't possibly have any chance of affecting, and two, is kind of rigged by an elite organized minority. So political activism is a surrogate activity. It is no better than pouring all your time, attention, and money into supporting Manchester United or Real Madrid, or playing video games all day, or becoming like a Star Wars obsessive. All of these things are surrogate activity. You cannot possibly get the same thing that you'd get from being part of a legitimate power process from these other activities. And this, again, has been a theme running all the way through these lectures. Last week, we looked at postmodernism and the basic condition of being in postmodernity as one of being locked out of an authentic life, authentic experience. This is the political side of that in many respects. The closest thing you have actually to being part of the power process is probably like joining your local church and helping to fix the leaky roof, something like this, or, you know, being involved in something local and communal such that you can affect some small bit of change. This would not be a surrogate activity in the idea, you know, in the mind of Kaczynski. But if we come back to the system's need for control, it's very difficult to escape because it doesn't really want you to be taking part in the power process. So if your local activities go above a certain level, if you stick your head too far above the parapet, you shall draw the eye of Sauron and it will come and stamp you out. It is rapacious. It doesn't like any little bit of genuine agency or autonomy outside of itself. You know, on YouTube, there's this Indian guru who he's dead now, but his name is Osho, right? And he's got this beard, and sometimes you'll see his videos come up, or, you know, you'll have seen him around. He's got a famous clip that goes around about democracy being stupid. which sometimes used to do the rounds on Twitter as well. Now, I remember years ago watching a documentary about this guy, Osho, because he had a cult. He literally had a cult around him. I think it was a Netflix series. It was called like The Wild West or The Wild Wild West. And basically what they did is they wanted to build a cult around this guy, Osho. And they bought themselves some land and they wanted to be self-sufficient and they wanted to kind of run this little bit of land somewhere in America, and in kind of just living unto themselves under their own kind of whatever. The managerial state did not like that. They very quickly come on under the radar of the FBI. Very quickly, the local authorities have a problem with it. Very quickly, there's a problem in that. It's a really interesting show to see. The system doesn't really like you going your own way too much. My friend Charlemagne, who's got a channel here on YouTube, made a video many years ago called No Exit. I recommend seeking it out because that video, No Exit, showed really the system doesn't want alternatives to itself existing anyway. Doesn't like it. You may have wondered, why does the system so relentlessly attack things like Scientology? Well, no, I'm not saying that Scientology is any great thing. But you notice it's a target of the regime. It doesn't like that being there, right, without being demonized in some way. It doesn't like the idea of there being these kind of self-sufficient communities like the Osho one. And so people always have this, oh, I'll go and live off the grid. I'll go and go it my own way. And you'll see how relentlessly those sorts of projects are attacked. There's one I know of in this country that has been relentlessly attacked. This guy bought some woodland and he wanted to make this community for himself. Attacked in the press, demonized, extremist, blah, 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 because it just cannot stand anything outside of itself. When I say soft totalitarianism, really the scope for maneuver is limited. So actually, you better get back to your surrogate activities, get back to your little Pokemon toys and your little Yoda plushie or whatever else. Get back to that. Get back to watching your slop on your Netflix and your cinema. Get back into your football. Yeah, we're all right with you doing that stuff because that stuff's a surrogate activity. That stuff... yeah, that's under our control. You start doing any of this other stuff and, woe betide you, essentially. And Kaczynski saw this. One of the most interesting aspects of Kaczynski's work is his really scathing attack, his, you might say, ruthless attack on the left, seeing the left mainly as a kind of psychological phenomenon. Now, this may surprise people, but this is not a new thing, this attack on the left as a psychological type. One of the first people to make this critique was Vladimir Lenin himself, who wrote an entire essay called Leftism, an Infantile Disorder. In fact, I've got books here behind me by Joseph Stalin and by Palm Dutt and by many other hardcore communists who had a problem with a particular type of person who gravitates towards the quote unquote left. Well, Kaczynski really kind of nails what this type of person is. The modern leftist is a psychological response to the humiliation and powerlessness generated by the industrial system. Rather than seeking genuine autonomy, Kaczynski argues, many activists seek power through collective identification as a surrogate for real agency. Now, he breaks this down even further because he says, like, look, there's two different types of leftists, right? There's your kind of genuine kind of unicorn-hatted utopian person who believes all the guff, right? And then there is a Machiavellian type who's in it for this little taste of power. Okay. It's a surrogate for real agency. Okay. Now, what is he talking about? And how can we picture this psychological leftist that Kaczynski has in mind? Well, it's the person in your organization who wears that rainbow lanyard, who gets themselves on this committee and that committee, or it becomes a HR manager or something like this, a little bit of managerial power, a little node, a little carve out of, you know, and basically wields that authority to have power over other people. And what he's saying is that because people are so powerless, because people really don't have anything, these people are becoming part of, right, as a psychological response, they're becoming part of the very thing, okay, as a surrogate for something else. Now, that's the one who gets themselves into organizational positions. But Kaczynski also has in mind the people who go along to all the marches, okay? Now, here in Britain, there is an identifiable, aging, I would say, class of person who basically goes to every rally and march in London. These are people who would have supported Jeremy Corbyn back when he ran. Maybe they'd be green types now. And they're basically in London every day, pretty much, or every week. I swear that there's probably someone who's got a collection of different hats. And here's my Extinction Rebellion hat, and here's my Stop the War hat, and here's my pro-Palestine hat, and here's my, I don't know, Pussy March hat, and here's my LGBT hat. Oh, here's my, you know, whatever else it is, pro-refugees, whatever. This is a class of person and a psychological type that Kaczynski identifies. And this activity, the going along to the protest, is, of course, another surrogate activity. Now, in the history of this channel, I have been a staunch opponent of street activism, of what I call placard activism. It is, to my mind, the most pathetic activity known to man. Why? Well, think about it even for a second, okay? You go to the government and you say to the government, I would like permission to march and down up this square, march and down up this street at this time with a sign because I oppose this thing, down with all this. And the government says, oh, okay then. We'll lay some police on. You march them down up that square at 2 p.m. to protest this. The government's all right with it. You have sought permission. Clearly, no, nothing is going to result from this. This is it's basically a play box. It's like a sand pit where the government says, here's a sand pit, go and play about in it. Whether it's a Tommy Robinson rally or Pussy Heart, it doesn't matter. In best-selling book, The Populist Delusion, I talk about speaking of Jeremy Corbyn, the march against the Iraq War that took place in, I think, 2003, when Tony Blair was the Prime Minister. It is the largest gathering, the largest protest in the history of London, in the history of Britain even. Over 1 million people were supposed to be in London that day. Did it stop the Iraq War? No. Did it stop Tony Blair being re-elected in 2005? No. Did it make the people who went there feel good about themselves? Yes. Did it dissipate the anger and the energy that had been built up in the anti-war movement up until that point? Yes. What happened after that? Nothing. An almost perfect demonstration of the principle of containment as a pressure release valve. You let this happen. I've said it before. Imagine Tony Blair just said, yeah, get the tanks out, open the guns on them. Then the system would have had a problem. But Tony didn't do that. He's like, yeah, go for it. I don't care. A million of you can march. Doesn't matter. I'll get back in. The war's going to happen anyway, guys. So, you know. And that's exactly what happened. But all of those people who were involved in those march, many of you watching this, probably, you know, chances are, if you're into politics and you're watching this channel and you're of a certain age, you went to that march. I could have gone to those marches. I remember the exact day. I didn't go because they were giving sandwiches out as a kind of inducement. And I saw the students going along there, lured by a sandwich. And I thought, I don't know about that. Also, I fancy myself as a bit of a neocon at the time, having read Robert Kagan's Of Paradise and Power. But that's a story for another day. Let's get back to this. Technology cannot be controlled selectively. Once advanced technology is adopted, society is compelled to accept its social consequences in full. Now, if this sounds very familiar to you, it's because Jacques Ellul made the exact same point. And Kaczynski was an avid reader of Ellul. So some of his ideas are Ellulian. There is no mechanism to retain the benefits while refusing the costs. The system develops according to its own requirements. Democratic preferences and ethical intentions are irrelevant to the overall trajectory. If the people don't want it, it doesn't matter. The consequences are: adoption creates dependency. Dependency forecloses alternatives, and the system demands further and further and further adoption. And we've seen this happen. We've seen this. I mean, one of the things I often think about is, what if Kaczynski had kind of written about what happened during COVID-19? Because the real upshot of COVID in many, many cases was a dramatic acceleration of technological timelines that had already, they were kind of already going in that way, but COVID made sure. The lockdowns and the disruption to the economy, it just made sure. It wiped off all those supra marginal firms that were just clinging on. Gone. It massively accelerated things like cash-free, you know, card-only, you know, the elimination of cash in many places. Now, and so many of the, I don't know about round by you, but round by me, so many of the things that were brought in during COVID as a temporary measure are still there now. It's 2026 now. COVID finished in early 2022 when, you know, let's not forget, it was miraculously cured by Vladimir Putin bombing Ukraine. But anyway, so yeah, the point is, things, once they get going, very seldom go back. The course is set. As technology advances, the system generates new problems that can only be resolved through tighter organization and control. So you get new technology being adopted in the first place, unforeseen problems emerging from that, system demanding solutions, and then further controls imposed. And in many cases, every managerial crisis we can think of follows this pattern. There's a new technology. This has produced problems. We need to do something about this. The solution is more power for us. And you can see the internet is going through this process as things stand, as various different states, the British state especially, but every country is going through this, trying to impose further controls for the governments of the world as against the quote-unquote wild west of the internet. Industrial society disrupts both the natural world and the evolved conditions under which human beings developed. the resulting mismatch between the environment we are biologically adapted to and the one that we now inhabit in the technological society produces widespread psychological and social distress that cannot be medicated or managed away. No coincidence that at exactly this time, there is an explosion of pathologies and mental health issues and anxiety and, you know, stress and just depression, yada, yada, yada. Reform is insufficient, according to Kaczynski. Gradual change within the system, fundamental dynamics remain intact. Surface adjustments are made. We fiddle around with the taxes here, fiddle around with the taxes there. You know, open this department, close that department. But basically, if the core structure remains the same, nothing's changed. Kaczynski contends that gradual reform cannot solve the core problem. So long as the industrial technological structure remains intact, its fundamental dynamics of expansion and control persist in perpetuity. Meaningful change, in Kaczynski's view, requires the absolute collapse of the system itself, not its modification. He wanted to see the break, the actual collapse of the industrial technological structure itself, and that would see the addressing of the root cause. Now, we can talk about this in theory, but I suspect that in practice, if Kaczynski ever got his wishes, we would see widespread problems, deaths, mass death even, because frankly, most people, including yours truly, including most of you watching this, wouldn't survive a day. You probably wouldn't, you know, you could go back to medieval times, for example, probably wouldn't survive a day without your all mod gone. Without, we are children of the technological age. We are used to, you know, electricity and internet and all of the things that we enjoy. Probably wouldn't last a day if this ever happened. I'm just being brutally realistic about it. And maybe he knew that. But I don't think he cared. The primacy of the system's logic. Individual intentions are secondary. Moral preferences and personal choices are overridden by the system's requirement for expansion. Democracy is constrained. Even collective democratic decisions cannot redirect the system governed by its own internal logic. Those who resist the system's demands are sidelined and rendered irrelevant, which I've already talked about. The system follows its own logic. Human beings must either adapt to this or be marginalized by it. There is no in between. That is Kaczynski in a nutshell. So that completes my week on the problems of mass and scale. You'll see a lot of crossover between Alul and Kaczynski, because obviously Kaczynski was coming after Alul, and quite a lot of overlap with Burnham and Samuel T. Francis as well, even though they were writing from quite different perspectives. Broadly speaking, Kaczynski and Alul from the left, and the left, broadly speaking, and Burnham and Francis from the conservative right, in theory. Although I think the great thing about all four of these thinkers is that they were able to be clear-eyed about the situation as it was, with no attempt to romanticize or cope or anything else. So pick up a course at the academic agency. I will see you all next week. Enjoy your weekends. Don't let these ideas get you down too much. Go on, enjoy your surrogate activity. Go and watch your Netflix. Go on. Bye, everyone.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.